must not have cleaned out after I used it last in like the back of a cupboard, and I opened it in the smell. I fucking gagged. It was disgusting.
Why? Well, who put their name as Jigballs?
That's been my name since like Salt 2.
Has it really, Jigballs?
Yes.
Yeah. I've never paid attention until now. Jigballs. I like it.
I try to change mine to a detective every episode, but there was no detective in this film, unfortunately. No cops, no police officers, no law enforcement.
There was absolutely police officers.
Yeah, not
what,
as
is it because they're African American that you didn't want to count them as police officers?
You were crooked, Kyle.
You racist.
They were crooked.
I mean, they were still police officers, nonetheless.
Wait, yeah, crooked or not? Like, I love movie cops. All right?
Racist.
Isn't Sing Sing a prison in China?
We have it on recording that Ian's racist.
Axel Foley's my favorite police officer.
We're kidding. He's not racist. Axel Foley is his favorite police officer.
Love Axel Foley. Love black people.
Okay, you don't say it like that.
But welcome. Don't.
No, it's good. No, we're doing great. I actually think that was a perfect transition. Go ahead.
Oh my god. Continue. Welcome to another episode. Hold on, let me make sure my gain. Yeah. Okay. Welcome to another episode of Ruminations of Red Rum. Today I am your host, not the best in the West, the Phantom, Danny Phantom, Phantom of the Opera, Ian, two E's, E squared. Ghost.
You didn't
Ian.
Call yourself
you
the Phantom
literally
of the
could
paradise.
Have said Phantom of the Paradise.
Phantom of the Paradise.
I thought the same thing. It's like as soon as he said it, I was like, what is happening right now? What are we even doing here?
It's because I just love Phantom of the Opera that much. With me, joining me virtually, so my virtual left, we have the absolute stretchy man himself. Every inch of his body stretches, especially his penis. Brendan Jesus Ortega Madison, Mr. Fantastic. How you doing?
And even when it stretches, it's still 3 inches. Hell, I am not only to That's your big. Virtual left, I am 1.2 miles farther northeast of you guys than I was last episode. I have moved. I'm in a new place. It's lovely. I'm going to set up a little office. I'm going to be just like Daddy Kyle. I'm going to have a little office.
His script sold. He has a 3,000 square foot condo. He's living the high life right now, rubbing it in. Brennan
can't break that contract though.
God, you know, Kyle, I was trying to figure out who your glasses remind me of, and they remind me of Jim Jones's glasses.
Who's Jim Jones?
The cult leader that had right? It's Flavor Aid. The cult leader that had his people drink Flavor Aid because they thought they were going to catch a comet. And
I'm looking at his right now. They kind of got that shade thing, which I'm a fan of. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where like the lenses go from dark to lighter?
Yes.
Is it like gradient?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to those? Like, you don't see anybody with those kind of shades anymore. Do they make them?
I would say he probably didn't do too much for the PR for that.
I'm going to get some.
He promoted Flavor Aid, though, and Kool-Aid.
Do you remember like those white Nike shoes had to stop being made because of all those photos that came out of the dead cult members wearing those white Nikes?
No, I didn't know. I don't know much about this guy. If Dawn was here, she'd be rapping with you right now.
Of course.
But I don't.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I'll text her later.
Yeah, I was going to say she. But me, on the other hand, yeah, no, I don't know much about him.
And also joining us to my virtual right, Kevin. Kyle.
You should have just said Kyle. You should have just said Kyle.
No, you should have just said Kevin and pretended like you didn't say anything different.
I like the name Kevin. Have you ever, like, I've only known two Kevins in my entire life,
Kevin James.
I didn't like either of them.
I knew a Kenneth. That was it. Is that? No, no, it's not.
The guy that used to be the super for my old apartment, his name was Kevin.
I feel like Kevin's like a dead name. Like, Kevin. I never, like, you never, like, even in...
It's a movie name.
Like, no, I was going to say, even in, like, fictional stuff, there's never, like, a Kevin.
Well, Kevin McAllister, like, okay,
obviously, no, minus like, the one.
That's the last one I can think of.
Yeah. What's the Don't Talk to Kevin? What's that movie? That
Something About Kevin.
Yeah, something about Kevin.
Never heard of it.
It's a serial killer movie. Just like
so, maybe they're out there.
But they're serial killers.
I'm doing great, Ian. How are you doing? You got a lot of schoolwork.
Yeah, I did. I was actually under a lot of stress last week because these classes are getting a little more advanced. Mm. You know, yeah. A lot of so uncomfortable social issues that I have to address. And like
let's talk about them now.
No, I would.
What's one of the social things that you're stressing
about? So you know, it's
like group project stuff.
It's about, you know, social institutions, personal relations and just stuff I'm uncomfortable talking about because growing up, I feel like it was a very open community. And I was like the token Jewish white kid in the group of like Mexicans.
I really thought you were just about to come out.
No. Not yet.
It's a safe space here, Ian.
Yeah, I'm not ready. But I'm just not used to talking about that stuff. So it's hard for me to do like discussions in the classes where everyone can like read them and they have to respond to my stuff. So it's just, I don't know. It takes longer. It takes a lot. But yeah, that's what I'm going through. But recommendations. Brendan, let's throw it back to you.
I finally watched David Cronenberg's Crash. What a movie.
I thought you watched the other Crash. That's why I was a little confused.
I did too.
Whenever anyone would ask me if I've seen Cronenberg's Crash, I would say yes.
Mm.
But it's because I had seen the 2004 Crash. And if someone was like, oh my God, you seen this Cronenberg movie? I'd be like, oh my God, yeah, it's so great. And then if they tried to press me on it, I'd be like, oh wait, no, oh, I'm so stupid. I got the 2004 one.
But like, why? Like, why would you say it?
Because I want to seem well-traveled in the world of film.
Mm. Is this a recent thing? Like, how recent? Yeah, he was personally doing it. Oh. How recently were you doing it?
I think like 2 or 3 years ago, someone asked me if I watched Cronenberg. I think it was around the time that Crimes of the Future came out.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with someone and they were like, what are your favorite Cronenberg movies? And I didn't list that one. Yeah. And they're like, oh, you didn't see Crash? I was like, ooh, I totally have.
Hot.
Great sex.
Yeah, I
got it. That movie is wild.
Which one?
The Cronenberg Crash. It's so good. James Spader is hot. All the actors in it are just so hot. It's a hot, hot movie.
Damn.
Highly recommend.
That's a good recommendation. Kyle, throw it over to you.
I'm just thinking about if I've ever been so insecure. Sorry, this is going to sound like I'm targeting Brendan. No. I'm trying to think about if I've ever been so insecure that I've lied to like try to fit in. I'm sure I have many times, but like I definitely have 100%, but I'm trying to think of a specific memory, but I don't have one on deck. So I'm just going to breeze past this. Let's talk about everybody's emotions. Okay. I watched, Ring You for the first time.
Oh yeah.
1998. It was all right. Not bad. I think seeing the remake kind of, it spoils it a little bit. I mean, it spoils it plot-wise, but I think also it spoils it from a technical standpoint. It's not as well-made movie, in my opinion, as the Verbinski one. But it was an entertaining watch. I didn't hate it. It was all right. I actually really liked the crawl out of the TV at the end. I thought it looked cool.
Yeah.
And it looked very practical, because it was. And
the husband is fuck, daddy. The guy from Sunshine.
Yeah, no, yeah, he's one of my favorite actors, dude, period.
Oh, he's in Shogun as well.
He's also in one of my favorite Danny Boyle films, Sunshine. So, yeah. You know, go watch that. Go watch Sunshine. But yeah, that was pretty cool. And then I think I'm going to take Dom on a journey to watch a lot of classics that she's never seen. So we started with Overboard. I want to show her Mr. Mom. She hasn't seen Mr. Mom. Dude, yeah, it's a classic.
So has she seen Three Men and a Baby?
That's an excellent suggestion that I'm also going to throw in there. Yeah. No, she
Twins.
Needs to see that.
You got to put Twins in there.
She's seen Twins. She likes Twins. Oh, okay. She's a big Danny DeVito fan, so she's seen a lot of his filmography. But yeah. So Overboard. That's a weird fucking movie, dude.
That's Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
I loved that movie growing up, and even rewatching it now, I still love it, but like, that movie is kind of wild. Like, the premise is pretty crazy. Like, and
seems
actually
like such
super
a sleaze
fucked
ball.
Up. It's kind of fucked up. But at the same time, like, it's like an ultimate revenge story, but in a weird, heartfelt way. And it still makes me tear up at the end. So, like, when she's driving away and the kids are, like, yelling mom and chasing the car and stuff, it tugs at my heartstrings. And I love it. I love that movie, and I will always love that movie. Ian, what have you been up to?
Yeah, that's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think so. Yeah.
I just want to highlight. I just want to give a shout out.
Sure.
To the to my month of what is it, March? Mm-hmm. I gave two new films a 5 out of 5 for all of 2023. And in the month of March, I gave 4 new films a 5 out of 5.
So where do you think that comes from? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was gonna say let's target this. Yeah. Like, where do you think the change is? Is it a mental change, or are you actually just watching 5 out of 5 movies? Are you
getting better movies?
Are you watching better movies? Or are you becoming a little more forgiving?
Great question. You know, as I grow up, I am definitely.
Kyle, you're in interview mode for this weekend, right?
I am, dude. I'm getting prepared. I'm getting prepared for Saturday.
I'm getting a lot. I'm learning a lot about empathy and, you know, social constructs. And
yeah, sure.
Just learning. I think it's cool. Honestly, I just think it's cool. But I'm just I'm opening my heart to things, just other things that I can possibly relate to, and if I don't, I can still appreciate it.
So what movies did you give a 5?
I gave 12 Angry Men, which is a masterpiece. Literally, it's the that and Harakiri are the two best films I've ever seen in my life.
So let's Those stop like there. Yeah. Let's stop there real quick. We'll get into the movie we covered, I promise.
In terms of filmmaking, best film.
Yeah, sure. But you have a long standing lineage, if that's even the word I should be using right now,
of watching old movies,
of not watching like 50s prior, 60s even prior and prior, because you said the acting takes you out of it, and the way they talk takes you out of it. their terminology, their whole cult, the whole culture back then.
Hate the 50s.
So what's different about this film?
This film, you get none of that. It is the most modern, what year did it come out? Like,
how's it modern?
It came out in 57. The way they talk, the way they speak, the themes, the dialogue, everything about this film is the most modern thing I've ever seen. And I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil it for people.
Spoil a 70-year-old movie?
Well, yeah. I mean, if they haven't seen like one of the greatest movies of all time, I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, no, I it's been on my watch list forever.
Yeah,
it's one I've always.
I'm here to say it lives up to the hype. I didn't know anything going in, but once like the first scene plays, I'm like, oh, okay, this could be cool with good dialogue, and it has amazing dialogue, amazing scenes, great cinematography, everything. Everything's perfect.
Great. My favorite part of 12 Angry Men is when pretty much everyone gangs up on Brian because he's the only one who believes that the person is... this is just a stupid Family Guy reference. I'm sorry.
Ian was shaking his head like it was real. Yeah, I was just talking about
Family Guy.
The characters don't have names, but I thought you like knew the movie that deep where they had names. And I thought you were leading to something, but
I'm sorry.
That's funny. So 12 Angry Men, masterpiece. Starship Troopers, hidden gem masterpiece. So many different themes, so many things that just go right.
Is it Starship Troopers that made you make this turn in life?
No.
Because it kind of feels like it is.
Is it? You can give it the credit.
It's a very important movie. It's a very important movie.
Fantastic film. And then the last two that hit me like personally, which was Moonstruck with Cher and Nicolas Cage, and then Lars and the Real Girl, which is literally me. If I didn't get a girlfriend within a year of me getting a girlfriend.
I had that movie on DVD when I was a wee little lad, and I used to watch it all the time.
Yeah.
I like that movie.
It's super funny, and the end is incredibly depressing and sad. And the performances.
I've always been into depressing, sad shit. Always.
I don't know why I get that movie and Her mixed up all the time.
So funny you mentioned that. I believe, let me see real quick. Who did Her?
Spike Jones.
Shoot. I don't know if it was these two films. Nah, never mind. I'm thinking of two different films. Cool. Nothing funny about it.
I will say though that I don't know if annoyed is the right word because I don't really care that much, but this whole movie thing you're going on right now, I'm missing when you gave games a little bit of a balance. That's all I'm saying. I'm missing the game, Ian.
What do you mean?
I'm missing the video game, Ian. That's all I'm saying.
I just finished a 45-hour game and then immediately started a 10-hour game after that.
Which one?
Unicorn Overlord, which was 45
hours. What's the 10-hour one?
Grim Grimoire, which was the 10-hour.
Gotcha.
Did you guys download the free games today?
I did. And I've actually been really wanting to play that first-person wizard one.
I don't remember what the games are. I know you sent them.
God.
Oh, Immortals?
Immortals of Avium looks low-key kind of like a banger. Like a hidden gem. Like, I think that game might be a hidden gem. I'm just saying.
Oh, Minecraft Legends?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Cheyenne's gonna love that.
Who?
My girlfriend.
Oh.
Because she's 12.
Okay.
Just kidding.
It's less funny when you say it. Okay.
I try to hit before it gets hit. Right. We're not here to talk about my underage. I'm just kidding. My 20-year-old girlfriend.
Jesus Christ.
We're not here to talk about my 20-year-old girlfriend. We're not here to talk about Kyle's...
Go ahead.
Montage of showing Dominique
classical films. I thought you were going to insult my glasses.
We're not... Well, and his dumbass glasses.
That's why I was like, go ahead.
We're not here to talk about Brennan's amazing sense of style. We're here to talk about the 1974 Phantom of the Paradise, directed by Brian De Palma. But before we get into our thoughts and where we watched it, Brennan's gonna hit you with some
Phantom of the Paradise marks a milestone in Ruminations of Red Rum history, as it is a 1974 film and the first Oscar-nominated film that we've ever covered. It is a horror comedy rock musical written and directed by Brian De Palma, with music and lyrics from Paul Williams. On a budget of $1.3 million, this film would bring in roughly $250,000. And adjusted for inflation, $1.3 million is $8.6 in today's money, and $250,000 is $1.7 in today's money. While most of the reviews were decently positive, Phantom of the Paradise would be marred as a cult film, mainly to be forgotten by the masses until 2014, with the Shout Factory Blu-ray. It should be noted, for some reason, this film was a huge hit in Winnipeg, Manitoba. It would screen daily for 4 straight months, and then on and off for the next year and a half. Nearly 30 years after its release, there would be a fan event in Winnipeg called Phantom Palooza, with some cast members in attendance. This event would be repeated the very next year, although I couldn't find if it continued after that. While the overall life of this film has a positive impact among fans, there is a downside. Phantom of the Paradise is one of the main factors that created one of the world's worst bands, Daft Punk. Phantom of the Paradise... Phantom of the Paradise...
You put that in, right?
I did. Phantom of the Paradise may be more horror adjacent than straight horror, but many great horror icons are a part of this film, with actors like Jessica Harper from Suspiria, Rod Sterling from Twilight Zone, Sissy Spacek, she worked on some set deck stuff, and she would team up 2 years later with Brian De Palma for Carrie. But this film may be a little difficult to talk about, but we're going to give it a try. But just remember, everyone who tries dies.
Oh, I'm still recovering from the Daft Punk comment.
Shout
did I strike a chord with that?
Not an insane chord, but a chord nonetheless.
It's a weird take.
It's a weird take, yeah.
Shout out to Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose. Go Moose.
Go Moose.
Go Moose. Kyle, you seem very starstruck by the Daft Tone thing.
The Daft Tone.
Daft Punk thing. Thoughts? Where'd you watch it? Would you watch it to your collection?
The Scream Factory or Shout Factory edition. I purchased it on Amazon. I'm a huge fan of musicals. I would say they're probably my second favorite genre outside of like horror. I like them a lot.
What's your favorite musical? That's not trying to be like a catch you off guard thing.
No, I know that. Yeah. I know. It's a cliche answer.
Okay.
It's Grease.
Okay.
It's my favorite. There's still a few that I need to see. All That Jazz is supposed to be a banger.
All That Jazz.
It's supposed to be an absolute banger. But shout out to Tommy. Tommy is amazing. And if you're into musicals, you should go check that out. But
can I tell you what goes through my head at least 3 or 4 times a day?
Yeah, what's up?
Ever since I was a young boy, I played the cinema.
Have you seen Tommy?
Oh yeah, many times.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Without fail, that goes through my head at least 5 times a day.
Real quick, not that we're covering this one, but what do you think about Tommy?
Oh, I love it. It's
so fucking weird and in such a good way. I love it.
I don't mean to derail us too much. Have you seen Julie Taymor's Across the Universe?
Oh, of course.
Oh my god, that movie is...
You like the Beatles, though, right?
I don't.
You don't, but you like that movie?
I fucking love that movie.
That's such a great musical. That's one that I've watched probably the most outside of Grease in my lifetime.
Ian, have you seen Across the Universe?
No, but every time I scroll past it on, I think it's on Hulu, I want to watch it. And I remember the trailer.
Do you think that Across
the
Universe...
Don't watch a trailer, just watch it.
Yeah.
Don't watch a trailer.
Do you think Across the Universe might have been a little bit inspired or homaged to Phantom of the Paradise?
No, because I mean, it's really just telling a depiction of the Beatles music and lyrics.
I mean, like, visually, with, like, the weird set decks and choreography.
So, I don't know, man, because I don't think, and I'll just get into this with my thoughts, I don't think that Phantom of the Paradise is very, especially for the musicals of the time, like Tommy, there was Jesus Christ Superstar, and I think Rocky Horror was 70s, right? Or was it 80s?
It was probably 70s. Maybe like 1980, something like that.
Keep talking, I'll look it up.
I feel like Phantom of the Paradise isn't weird enough. And I enjoyed the film, but 75. Like 75. Okay, yeah. So like all that jazz, Tommy, Jesus Christ Superstar, Grease, Rocky Horror Picture Show, the 70s was like the golden era for musicals. And I feel like this one was a little underwhelming for me personally. And it's because the musicals that I tend to really, really like are ones where it's not like, I don't know if I would really count this as a musical. It's like a movie about music. Because musicals, how do I word this? Like
they sing instead of just
the
dialogue.
Music is integrated into the dialogue of the film. They're all performing music for an audience. It's not really like the flow of conversation, I guess.
It's the difference between diegetic sound and non-diegetic sound. Like the words that are like in a musical, in like Grease, the words that they're singing are acknowledged by the people that are also singing, but not the outside world.
Correct.
Yeah.
And in this film, it doesn't do that. And it's kind of, it's kind of a detractor for me personally, but, I've never seen Phantom of the Opera either. So I'm sure Ian will have a lot more to say about this, but I'm sure this is like a take on it in a lot of ways. But I did enjoy the movie, but I thought it being the pedigree of De Palma and the 70s and what I thought was going to be more of a musical, I would have enjoyed it a little bit more. It's got the De Palma flair for sure, though. Like there's a lot of the DNA in there. Like even like in Mission Impossible, I don't have many of his films to reference, so that's one I've watched a billion times. But like he loves shooting in a way that like the objects in the foreground are the ones that are like talking, but they're not the ones that are focused on. It's kind of hard to explain. I can't explain it, but I like his style of directing a lot. And
it's kind of like a shadow play.
Yeah, it's weird, but I like it a lot. And he does it in Mission Impossible. Like a lot of his style, he carried on through the years and the decades. And I'm a big fan of his directing. But as a musical, it didn't hit for me. I do think a lot of the songs are awesome, especially anything sung by Phoenix. Those were bangers. Like her first main performance, which we'll get into. I'm not trying to stretch this out. I'm just talking. But I don't really get the horror aspect of this. It's not really a horror movie to me. I'm going to stop talking so we can
have discussions.
Yeah, so we can have a discussion. But I mean, that's what we're doing. We're talking. You know, we're really 28 minutes in. I enjoyed it, though.
Thank you for your thoughts, Kevin. Brendan, where'd you watch it? Would you add it to your collection? It wasn't that funny. What'd you think about it?
I rewound the opening Juicy Fruits song, I think 6 times. There's been movies, I'm not saying that I'm going to give this movie a 5 because I don't know if it deserves it. There's been a lot of movies that I've given a 5 and I've professed my love for on this show. And a lot of times that is based in either nostalgia or personal preferences. This is truly one of the most enjoyable films that I've ever watched for this show. I'm finding it hard to get my thoughts together. I enjoyed every single aspect of this movie. I rented it on, I think, just through YouTube for $4. I will 1,000,000% be adding this movie to my collection. This is going to be a movie that I rewatch very frequently. And I'm just going to ask a super quick question. I'm sorry, Ian, that I've been asking so many questions. But this was a tweet I put out there, and I'm curious for you guys. Is there a movie that you regret waiting to a certain point in your life to watch? Like, you wish, you're like, why didn't I watch this earlier? I would have been so happy.
Yeah, there was a recent example. I'm trying to think of what it was, but I remember saying it on the podcast not that long ago. I just don't remember what it was. But yeah, that's happened a few times in my life where I'm just like, how the fuck did I never see this? Actually, you know, a recent example, it's not as extreme, but that one that I just watched, Identity, was one where I was just like, how have I never seen this before? This was such a good fucking movie. And it came out at a time where it was like Pete Kyle, like I was like perfect age for it too, like 14, 15, you know? And that's definitely one, but there's been others.
One that I watched actually this week would be an anime, Devilman Crybaby. I think it came out 2018, so like right when I was getting into anime and watching new stuff, and like watching like Elf and Lead, A Comic Got Killed, very bloody and violent anime, and it would have been perfect if I didn't hold off on it. And I mainly did because I didn't like the animation style. But while I was watching it this week, amazing anime style. And I'm glad I can appreciate it now. But
that juicy song, that juicy song in the beginning, by the way, was an absolute fucking banger.
I know.
Dude, it was so good. It was so good. It's one of the best songs in the movie, honestly.
It's like... It's almost kind of like in an anthology film when they start the film with their very best segment and it puts you up on that fucking high, and then it just like immediately takes you down.
I was hoping it would like be a true musical, man. Like in the sense that I was talking about. Because the music was so good. Ian, what'd you think about it?
I'm actually glad it didn't start. Oh, because the Juicy Fruits start playing. I hate 50s everything. I really was hoping it wasn't going to be that the whole time. And then we transition into rock, and I like that a lot more. I'm glad it went into that direction. But interesting that we all have different views on that. I watched this on YouTube, and I would definitely, I am going to add this to my collection. I really hope I can find one with a slipcase, but I don't think it's a pretty old release, so I don't think.
I'm sure you could find it on eBay.
Probably, hopefully for a good.
I mean, they have a Shout Factory. Are you talking about like a different version?
No, because well, I mean, it's like only Shout the Factory limited edition one that comes with the slipcase. I think
the one you have didn't come with a slipcase, right?
It did not. I mean, it's a limited edition, but it's not. I think they all say that. All the Shout Factory and Screen Factories say that.
Would add this to my collection. Bada bing, bada boom. First topic we can get into, the songs. I know we all have... Do we all think this is a musical? I know Kyle doesn't.
No, I'm willing to categorize it as one. like it's weird. I just don't think... If somebody calls it a musical, I'm not going to be like, you're wrong. It's not my definition of a musical. Mm-hmm. It's not what I think of. Like, it's like saying that, like, School of Rock is a musical.
Yeah.
And it's not. You know what I mean?
But what would you call that? Is there another name for it? Or is it?
I don't think that there's a genre for
rock,
it, really.
Rock opera?
I mean, that would be perfect. It could be a rock opera, but like that's not an official like movie genre, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like if we're talking
about
it is
if
just,
we say it is.
Sure. But I mean, like, if we're going by, like, just definitive movie genres, I personally would not classify this as a musical. I think it's a film about music. I feel like it's a film about music.
Yeah, I agree. And I think something that does, like, horror, like a horror musical perfectly is something like, what's the one with the plant?
Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors. Because that tells a story. It's got a bunch of different fun scenes with songs. And this just doesn't really, like,
That is a musical.
I'm very music illiterate. I don't know a lot about music. So this is, like, not my forte. But I just think this really doesn't classify as a musical. If anything, it should just be like a horror drama with music. But Brendan, what do you think?
The soundtrack for this movie it sold 20,000 copies, and I believe it was in Winnipeg again. And so it went gold on the Canadian charts. I would find myself listening to the soundtrack for this movie over and over. You know, and again, I think this kind of goes back to regretting not watching this earlier, because in college, one of my musical theater classes, we had to reenact a scene from a movie musical. And I so wish that I would have had seen this, because I would have gotten two friends and we would have done the opening number, because I just love it, because you're watching this 50s white rock group. And that's not why I love it. I'm wait.
It wasn't a thing until you made it a thing.
Yeah, I know. I was gonna say rockabilly, but I think that's wrong. But in they're just like these three milquetoast guys. And then all of a sudden they start attacking the crowd, and the lead singer, you know, pretends to kill himself, and all. It's just, this movie is so gaudy and garish. And
yeah, they're called the Undead. And I think that, dude, the metal band Ghost, it looks like such an inspiration off that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. Such an inspiration. I thought that whole scene was so cool. Yeah. That's where it started. That's the thing about this film, is like every time the music was playing, it was fucking hidden. Like, mm-hmm. every scene, the choreography, the directing, the cinematography, and everything during all the musical numbers were great.
I think that it was Beef's. What were you gonna say?
No. Go ahead.
Beef's final number, mm-hmm. like the one that he dies during, it is, pun intended, it is not intended, it is so electric. It is his stage presence, the guy that plays Beef, he's such a good actor, and he fully nails it. It kind of, his performance in that song kind of feels a bit like Dr. Frankenweenie, what's his name, from Rocky Horror?
I've never seen Rocky Horror.
He kind of reminds me of Tim Curry's character, whatever his name is. Frankenheimer, yeah. I think.
I can see that.
Frankenheimer.
I don't know.
Curly hair. Not a lot of clothes.
I loved Beef.
Oh, Beef.
I loved him.
Wait, there was one line.
He was probably my favorite character in the movie.
When the Phantom rewrites the cantata for, he thinks he's rewriting it for Phoenix, so he writes it in her vocal range, mm-hmm. and
he's doing like a screamo.
Yeah, and Philbin is like, basically, bro, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, this is written for a woman, and I am not doing drag. So good.
I want to oppose Kyle's stance on just the music being good in this film, because I think the story was really good. I think the characters, mm-hmm. were written.
I'm not saying the story was bad.
Okay.
I'm just saying the strength of it was definitely during the musical numbers.
Definitely. Yeah. But I also just really like the characters. I think they're written so oddly, and they have a lot of personality to them and a lot of mystery. Like characters like Beef, and characters like Swan, who has a ton of mystery behind him. Is he the devil? Is he a Satan worshiper? Is he into witchcraft? Like, what's the deal with him? I'm referring to the bathtub scene.
Good.
Well, I was just gonna ask Ian, are you familiar with the story of Faust?
No.
The story of Faust is the basic elementary version is someone makes a deal with the devil. That's what it is. So he is not the devil, but when he goes to kill himself in the bathtub, that's when the devil shows up, basically.
There's a lot of literary sense in this where like stuff like the contract where he couldn't kill himself and he can only die when Swan dies and stuff like making a deal with the devil. I like that about this film. Mm-hmm. It makes it very odd and magical.
That's what musicals do. And actually, this is probably going to be a gateway drug for you then, because if you liked all those things about this film, in my opinion, there's musicals of the 70s that do it better. And I think not the Faust story, but just the weird, the magical, the loop, the wackiness, the craziness. Like, that's what I was kind of commenting on earlier, where I feel like this movie's more tame in a lot of ways compared to other 70s musicals. You would really like that decade of film with musicals if you like this a lot. So,
well, I also just really like the directing style. Brian De Palma does a lot of things in other films that you can like tie together. It's literally the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood meme where Leo's on the couch. He's like, where you're like just pointing out things that you've seen in other movies that you're like, oh, he does that in other thing. Like the split camera in Sisters, or there's a the ending.
Even in Mission Impossible, he does the split thing too. Yeah.
Yeah. The ending where it's a very happy surround. They're like surrounded by a lot of joy and celebration, but they're dying. Like, that's directly from a movie called Blowout with John Travolta, where I think he's killing someone, or he's getting killed, whatever. But there's like fireworks going on in the back. It's a very odd thing. But I really like that directing style from him.
Something that you mentioned that I was hoping we could touch on is, I think it's, they only do it twice, the split shot. Mm-hmm. And the first time, the first one with the explosion, I had to go back and watch that multiple times, because I think that's, you kind of hit the nail on the head. That's what's so impressive with Brian De Palma as a filmmaker, because you see these people on the car on the left-hand side of the screen, and then he brings new action to the right side of the screen with the camera zooming in on the Phantom and then panning over to Swan, and you forget that there's something going on the left-hand side of the screen, and then that explosion just makes you think in your mind, like, holy shit, I didn't see those people get off the car, so I went back and rewound it, and you do kind of see them get off the car, but like the way that the explosion is cut into that film absolutely blew my mind.
No pun intended. And also, no, if you like that, watch Sisters, because he does the same trick to where he's filming the same scene from two different angles, but in the two films, he uses a climactic moment to bridge the gap between the two scenes to make it into one. And in this film, it was the explosion.
It's so cool how we get to talk about like good directing for once, and like, we don't have to bring up the segment what could have been better, you know. This was an Oscar nominated film. Like, we can actually just dissect it, and I just want to take a second to appreciate that.
It's nice. It's like, it's fun to cover Rabbit Man,
the
Bunny Man or like Noah's Shark, or you know, the Saw movies. Like, those are fun. It's fun to cover.
I just want to say on record, he included the Saw films with Noah's Shark.
You know what point I was trying to make. You know, I'm going to go drink some Flavor Aid now. You made me feel bad.
Oh, God, no.
But yeah, no, I get the point you were trying to make. The Saw films are... Okay, go ahead.
But no, Ian, I agree with you. It's fun to... the amount of notes that I took for this movie compared to The Burrowers is absolutely insane. I have 3 pages of notes here.
Because there's a... I don't want to directly compare Burrowers, a totally different film, but there's a lot of inconsistencies in that film. There's inconsistencies in this film, but it's like, it's all over the place to where it's like, it's more art.
It feels like a choice, kind of.
I don't think there's any inconsistencies in this film.
Well, the first one I can think of is the scene where the Phantom attacks Beef in the shower. Mm-hmm. Beef has a scar drawn on his face. And then as Beef is exiting the theater and running down the stairs and runs into Philbin, there's a the male-female sign on his face, which could have been a mistake. Or I also like the fact that after Beef was attacked by the Phantom, he took the time to apply a new temporary tattoo to his face.
That's pretty funny. Oh, okay, yeah. First of all, I didn't notice that. Second of all, I wasn't thinking of like inconsistencies with like continuity errors, but interesting.
I also really like the point of view. There's like a bunch of first person camera angles from Winslow. I think it's just from Winslow, right?
Yes. It's very like 70s giallo.
Yeah.
Killer stalkings scene.
Mm-hmm. They don't do that anymore.
They don't.
What did you guys think of the
editing? I don't make movies like they used to, am I right, boys? Sorry, but go ahead.
What did you guys think of that editing effect that they used on Beef for his electrocution? I was completely stunned.
Stop with the puns, dude.
That was not on purpose.
This guy.
I was completely in awe by that, because it was so subtle, and if it wasn't there, it would have been fine, but the fact that it was there just kind of elevated it for me.
Yeah, the editing in this film is great. I love that scene, and there's also another scene where the marriage is happening, and you can see the Phantom running through the stands, mm-hmm. the auditorium, and he like directs the gun so he won't shoot her. There's some really good editing in this film, and that's one of them. Amazing. Kyle, do you have any other directing notes?
You guys kind of hit it.
We're running a little short.
There's another. Wait, you mean like we have to fill some more time? Is that what you're saying?
No, we don't have a lot of time.
We're running out of time.
Okay. Sorry, never mind then.
Did you guys have any other like major things you want to talk about? Yes, I mean we could talk like for probably another hour.
We're fine. Just say what you got to say.
Okay. I'll just mention 2 things. There's a line that I think Swan has. I never let my personal desires influence my aesthetic judgment. I need that line on a t-shirt or something. That is such a good line. But the other thing that I really loved is there's a very heavy bird imagery is a big thing in this movie. I'm not too sure why, if it's just a style thing or if it means something deeper than I'm figuring out. But there's a scene where Phoenix,
maybe because her name's Phoenix.
Well, in their Swan, I mean, the Phantom's mask looks kind of like a bird's beak. There's just a lot of bird stuff. There's a scene where Phoenix is wearing a shirt. And there's a bird over each one of her breasts. And I did some research just to make sure, and I'm pretty sure I'm correct, but the birds that were on her shirt were tits. Like, have you ever heard of the bird, the tit?
No.
But
yeah, there's
but
a bird.
That's clever.
Yeah, there's a bird called the tit. So I like the tits on the tits.
Nice.
That's funny. I do want to note that this is a very loose adaptation of the Phantom of the Opera. There's this. It's almost its own thing.
The bare bones of it kind of go along with.
Even me not seeing Phantom of the Opera, I know the bare bones, and it's definitely that.
Like there's
it's crazy that that this movie would wait, no, never mind. That was stupid.
Man, I saw the gears turning. I saw the light in the eyes, and I was like, he's trying to think of something good.
I was going to reference Phantom of the Opera as a the Gerard Butler movie, but I couldn't get there.
I was rooting for you, man.
Fucking love that movie. Cheyenne actually really wants to rewatch Phantom of the Opera, and I'm all for it. All for it.
In a few years, she'll be old enough.
It's funny we need
it. It is. It's funny.
All right. Well, with that being said, we can get into our final thoughts and rating. Kyle, hit me.
Brian De Palma, best director of all time on Ruination.
No.
Brian De Palma is a great director. I'm a fan of all of the films I've seen of his. Sisters being my favorite, probably. I'm a real big fan of that movie just because of the way it's made. And being a musical lover, it was cool seeing his style in that genre. I'm glad I own it, and I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Brendan.
Sing for me.
Oh.
Just real quick, a shout out to Beef's final song again. The crowd work in that, where they start ripping limbs off the audience members, and then there's the human marionettes. A+, no notes. This movie was so fun. It was one of I can't remember if I said this. This was probably the most enjoyable film for me that we've ever covered. I cannot wait to buy this movie. Once I figure out what my new address is, I'm going to order it. I lied at the beginning and I said I don't think this is a 5 out of 5 movie. For me, this is very easily a 5.5.
I'm not a musical guy. I wouldn't never consider myself a musical guy. But I like the music in this. I love the directing. I really like the characters. I like the story. There's a lot to like about this film. 4.5 with a heart, and this Phantom of the Paradise gets an official Ruminations of Red Rum rating of 4.5 and a heart.
Wait, what did you give it?
4.5.
Oh, okay.
Kyle, give it a 4. You give it a 5.
Right. Okay. Sorry.
Sweet. Hell deserving. Yeah.
Have we ever given a movie a 5?
We were going to have a full 5 on, I think, Perfect Blue, right?
Perfect Blue.
And then Brendan gave it a 4 or a 4.5.
Why would I do that? What's wrong with me?
I gave it a 5. Ian gave it a 5. And I think you gave it a 4.
That's when we were doing like a point system. We weren't doing like half stars and stuff like that, though.
Mm, yeah. Okay.
I think that might be our highest by default, but.
Can I retroactively change that?
No. Before we get into the greatest game show on podcast history, please enjoy a word from our sponsors.
On podcast history.
On podcast history.
Not in.
Say
on.
Thick piss break. Nothing. I do have to take a thick piss.
Hear the Phantom of the Opera. Sing for me.
You've seen Twin Peaks all the way through, but all you have are spoiler-free discussions? At Blue Rose Task Force Podcast, no information is classified and nothing beats the listening sensation when production history collides with deep theory. Put the coffee on.
Welcome back, folks. It is time to listen to Brendan burp more than he's ever burped before and hit our What's in the Box segment, a game show where I will give a summary of a movie on Letterboxd. My two contestants, two beautiful, handsome, manly, but feminine co-hosts, will guess the movie based on the description. If they're 0.3 from the rating, they get a point. If they're on the dot, they get 2 points. They will then guess the decade. If they get that, they get a point. If they guess the year, They get another point. Are you guys ready?
No notes on that intro. Zero notes whatsoever.
I just want to say that I'm excited for Ian to watch more musicals. See whatever.
A musical horror story about two young women who are stalked through a shopping mall by the cannibal named Arthur. He follows them home, and here the victims become the aggressors.
2.8.
3.1. So we had 2.8 from Brennan, 3.1 from Kyle. Classic. This is sitting at a 4.0. Guess the year.
Yeah, I forgot if we're doing musicals, most of them are rated pretty high.
That's
it's kind of like anime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Every anime is rated high.
Yeah.
80s, I guess.
Musicals don't exist in the 90s, so we could just scratch that decade out.
Yeah. Although, watch. Actually, one of the greatest musicals ever is from 1994.
I know they exist, but do they? You know? I'm going to say... I'm going to say 80s. No, I'm going to say 70s.
I really can't think of any now that you say that. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Because they don't exist. What's it called? What's his face? Brendan. With the point, this is 80s, guess the year.
I'll say one of the best years of the 80s, 1988.
I'm thinking three, bro. I'm thinking three.
Oh, was Kyle guess?
Was Kyle guessing?
No, I'm not guessing. I was trying to help Brennan.
So you think 1983?
I was just feeling three, but based on your answer, he freaked out, so it might be closer to that.
I'm going to stick with it because 1988 was one of the best years because it was you.
Year I was born.
Dude. This is the 1983.
I know my musicals, baby!
12-minute short film called Possibly in Michigan, directed by Cecilia Conduit.
I almost said the name
of this title, and I almost said it because it is as long as the description. She keeps monsters in cages for her pets. He preys on wild go-go girls. Jerry, his girlfriend Angela, and their friend Harold take a trip to a local seaside carnival. But when the carnival's fortune teller, Madame Estrella, predicts death for someone close to Angela, strange things begin to happen.
Okay, so this isn't a musical.
No, but you got to think of the keywords, Brennan, to get the decade right. We got carnivals.
80s. That,
we got, hold on though, hold on. We got go-go girls. That brings 70s. That brings it below the 80s.
Yeah.
That brings it below the 80s. So we're talking 60s or 70s. I would probably say 70s. Because 60s, I don't know. Do they call them go-go girls in 60s?
I'm gonna go guessing the rating.
Sorry. Oh, right. Oh, yeah, that's right. I thought we were guessing the decade. I'm gonna go 3.6. That's high. 3.4.
I was gonna go 3.3. But I'll to make it a little more interesting, I'll go 3.2.
3.4. 3.4. Zeros on the board. This is sitting at a 2.1.
Ooh, wow.
Guess the decade.
Oh, I'm an idiot, so, and I thought it was musicals again.
Yeah. So what can we gather from this? It's a 2.1. I don't think that there was a single 60s film rated a 2.1. So it's definitely not 60s.
Well, no, I mean think about
70s
it. Think
has some shitters though. That I think that's when the decade started with shitters.
But think about all the low budget schlock monster movies in the '50s and sixties. They're all scored really low.
Are they though?
I'm talking about the ones where it's like the UFO
yeah,
is
like
hanging
the ants,
on a wire,
like the giant ants, or like the giant yeah. I say 70s. What do you say?
I think to keep it interesting. Mm-hmm. I'll go, because I don't think it's 60s, but I think it could be on the cusp of 70s or 80s. So
I think you might. Or actually, no, it's not 50s.
The Go-Go's weren't.
I'll say 80s, just because I don't think it's the 60s.
Okay.
This is the 1964 film, The Incredibly Strange Creatures Who Stopped Living and Became Mixed Up Zombies.
I fucking hate myself.
It had to be 60s or 70s.
By Ray Dennis Steckler.
Said it had to be one of the two.
He's got a bunch of cool movies. Blood Shack. Crazy.
Blood Shack, baby. I was thinking the same thing.
Final round. It's a close one. Kyle 0, Brendan 1.
Hell yeah.
Not Your Parents' Opera. By the year 2056, an epidemic of organ failures has devastated the planet. The megacorporation GeneCo provides organ transplants on a payment plan. And those who can't... Wait. Oh, I don't know if Brennan's seen this or not.
I have.
And those who can't... I mean... Those who can't fulfill their plan have their organs repossessed. In the midst of this, a sickly teenager discovers a shocking secret about herself, her father, and her connection to GeneCo.
Well, if Brendan has seen this movie, it's definitely after the 2000s.
I watched Crash. Thank you very much.
Oh, you brought it back. Nice. Nice. He is cultured.
Still do.
2010. Oh, wait. We're guessing the rating.
Also,
2.9.
I'm going to say 3 on the dot.
2.9, 3 on the dot. You guys both get awarded a point. This is sitting at a 3.1. Guess.
Bodega. Brennan knows.
Good for Darren Lynn Bousman.
Damn.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the director. I don't know the director. 2010s. Just kidding. No, I'll stick with it. I already said it.
You can change it if you want.
No, it's okay. I'm sticking with it.
I'm going to stay the aughts.
This is the aughts.
See, this is why...
Who's Darren Lynn Bousman again?
He
directed Saw 2, Saw 3.
Oh, yeah.
He directed the Amazing Trilogy.
See, if people would listen to my fear facts, I said it.
Did you?
I did.
In this one? In this fear facts?
No, in the Saw 4 fear facts.
Brennan, you got to understand something.
That was like 2 months ago.
When you get to my age, you forget what happened the week before, okay? So, you got to cut me.
That's fair.
I listen to all your fear facts.
I know you do.
I don't even know what I ate this morning.
Exactly.
Brennan, are you open for Kyle to get 2 extra points if he gets the...
No, I don't like pity points, man. I'm not a fan.
That's why I'm asking Brennan.
Okay. Brennan. I'm cool with it, but if Kyle doesn't want it, then...
Just
if you get the year on the dot.
I'll keep it interesting. Good.
Guess the year.
2008.
This is the 2008 Repo the Genetic Opera.
Oh!
So.
All right.
You guys are tied, I guess? I know.
Nah, he gets it. I just am glad that I got the figure right.
Okay. Brennan won yet again. Awesome. You're like the Patriots.
Fucking sucks.
With that being said, this has been the Phantom Paradise of the Ruminations Radio Network. If you like what we're doing here, follow us on Twitter, OF Red Rum of Red Rum. Link in the Discord. Of the Discord is in our bio. We're on literally anything, Spotify, iTunes, anything. literally anything.
Soon to be on TikTok and Instagram stories. Since I can't get Ian's ugly mug to be on camera or leave his fucking house for 2 seconds to record some videos, I'm going to have to
just call me ugly.
Get with Brendan, who lives 1,000 miles away, to record some video. That way I can put it on there. So we're going to be on there this year. It's going to happen this year. Be patient, guys. We're still young in our, you know, podcasting journey. Give us a fucking moment. But you're going to start seeing our mugs soon.
I'm growing my mustache out for it again.
Me too.
Nice. Oh, I see.
You can't see.
It's like a Bigfoot. It's like, oh, wait, there's something there.
Whatever. I'm Ian, Phantom of the Paradise. There two E's. Go. Ghost of Ian. Lou Ferrigno. Joining me. Kevin, right?
There you go. Okay. That's when it was going to be good. Okay. I was hoping you'd nail it. Brian De Palma, best Mission Impossible, Mission Impossible 1, not taking any comments. Thank you.
The Elastic Mr. Fantastic, the savior of San Fran. Brenna Jesus Trega,
Hail Ratma and Hail Frogman.